Now live from Everbank Field, 1010 XL 92.5 FM presents Jaguars Today with your hosts Mike Dempsey and Tony Smith.
Hey, welcome in everybody. A Metro Rooter Wednesday kicking off here at Everbank Field. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you on 1010 XL 92.5 FM. Jaguars Today. We are locked and loaded today, Tony.
Yes, we are.
I feel like we've spoiled the listeners in recent weeks. We had what many thought was the best guest day ever just a few weeks ago with Dave Caldwell and Bold City Cap and, of course, Jimmy Smith on the program. Yeah, we've had Fred Taylor. I think we've had Fred on the program because he's been here in person a few times over the months leading into the season, and certainly we worked with him on the pre- and post-game show this past year. But Fred Taylor will join the show today. And interestingly enough, his son Kelvin was best friends with Dante Fowler at the University of Florida. So I get the feeling Fred knows Dante pretty well, and they also share an agent, by the way. What does Fred need an agent for, anyway, by the way? Honestly, Fred, what do you need an agent
for? He's getting on Jaguars postgame.
I guess, but I mean, do you think the Jags didn't want him anyway? Do you think it took an agent to get that deal done? I doubt it. Anyway, Freddie T will join us later on today to talk about the Fowler connection. You know, Fred's always fired up when there's a Gator connection.
Oh, yeah.
For the Jags. And there have been a lot of them over the years. Some extremely good. Some of them, let's forget them as quickly as possible. That's just the nature of, you know, you draft enough guys from any school, you're going to have some of that along the
and
way.
And maybe he has an opinion on T.J. Yeldon as well.
Absolutely. You know, I'm sure he's got plenty of opinions on everything going on with the Jags, but boy, T.J. Yeldon, Tony, is continuing to pick up some praise. Greg Cosell yesterday really talked him up. Greg Cosell is one of these guys that watch a bunch of film, and he's kind of cornered the market, right, as kind of being that one guy out there who is the film junkie, who's not aligned with a specific team in the National Football League, and just really likes the fit with what he sees here. I saw a couple of stories, you know, on NFL.com talking up T.J. Yeldon. Greg Rosenthal thinks that he'll be the breakout, basically the fantasy lead back in the National Football League this year, which means he expects him to produce the biggest numbers out of all the running backs selected. And I think it's a good bet because, to me, I don't know what Todd Gurley's going to give you early in the season. You know what I mean? And the one thing about Melvin Gordon, Danny Woodhead's coming back, and will he see as many third down reps as you like? I think T.J. Yeldon has a chance to play on a lot of third downs this year.
I do too.
If he gets those 16 carries a game Dave Caldwell was talking about, you take 256 and catch 40 balls out of the backfield, get right around 300 touches, and if he's the primary goal line guy, he had a pretty good nose for the end zone at Alabama. You know, you might have something cooking there, and everybody continues to love everything the Jags did beyond that point in terms of just getting values on their third, fourth, fifth, and sixth round picks. And Cosell echoed that yesterday. So
yeah,
we'll talk to the general today.
We will.
How about that?
Which general?
The architect.
Okay.
The architect of the roster. Which general? The general manager, Dave Caldwell, will join us today.
I'm just, because Alfie, I guess, is, you know, he could be the
this
general
is true.
Of
He's
the
a big cat country
online crusade that is Jaguars Twitter. So he
Uncle Chaps is upset with you right now.
They're co-commanders, or at least they could be. Look, we're going to have Alfie on too. But, yeah, we're looking forward to today's show. We got a lot of cool guests coming on.
It's going
to
be fun. Caldwell, you know, right now, he's such a chill guy. But, man, you got to think. Don't you think when he's home at night, he takes 30 minutes and he reads through every review and he's like, that's right, I got another A. Maybe I'm just projecting what I would do, because I damn sure would do that if I were Dave Caldwell this year. Of course, if you do that, you got to read all the bad ones, too. You know what I mean? You can't be selective about it. And the good
Where are
guys.
They?
Not this year. They're
right.
not. But I'm saying, you know, at any point, if you're going to pay attention and say that carries any weight whatsoever, then you got to take the good with the bad. It really doesn't carry weight. But as we said frequently this week, you'd rather see that than the alternative as far as that goes. Alfie's already stuck his neck out there with the 53-man roster projection at Big Cat Country. You know, he has. He's got Nick Marshall on the squad, by the way.
It's a little early for that.
Hey, well, you know what? Why? We've got the majority of guys who are going to be competing for those 53 spots.
Oh, I know he does it every year. So
absolutely.
He does it now, and then he'll do it again when we get to
camp. It's a ridiculously difficult exercise. There's no question about that. But if I were to ask you right now, not to get into specifics of who they might be or what positions, but how many guys will make the opening day 53-man roster that are not currently on the Jaguars roster? I would think maybe none, right?
Maybe zero.
Now, it's possible you pick up a guy or two during training camp that gets cut on another team that happens to be a better fit for you. But it's not like – I don't get the sense, at least, that it's like the first couple of years where you're just – you're always going to be looking. But the opportunity is just not going to be there because the depth on your roster is the best it's been, clearly. And, again, that doesn't – you know, maybe I'd say one. Maybe I'd say, you know, zero – is pretty definitive, but it's going to be an extremely low number, you would think, barring a rash of injuries for the Jags. And so we'll get into all that coming up today. Alfie Crow, Big Cat Country, Fred Taylor, going to join the program. Needs no introduction. Of course, the general manager of your Jacksonville Jaguars, Dave Caldwell, is there as well. Today, Tony, we're going to talk about underrated acquisitions. Not going to have a whole lot of time to discuss it, but that's the question of the day today. You know, it's easy to look at Dante Fowler. I don't think you can be an underrated acquisition when you're the third overall pick in the draft.
Right.
I mean, everybody, and as Coach Sell said, again, to quote him because he was so effusive in his praise of the Jags, number one defensive player on his board was Dante Fowler. So he loved the pick. He really loved the first six picks that that the Jags made. And honestly, those guys in the seventh round, I think, got a shot as well. To make the roster here, so we'll see how it goes. I mean, tight end's not your deepest position on this football team. You get past the top two guys, I think it's wide open for Koyak. We'll just see how that whole thing shapes up. But underrated acquisitions, Tony, not only limited to players. They've had changes on the coaching staff.
Mm-hmm.
I think right off the top of my head, Doug Marrone may be – he doesn't get talked about a bunch, but the sore spot that was the offensive line last year, not only got fresh bodies, but you got a fresh set of eyes to work with those bodies. Keep in mind, George Yarnough, they lost their offensive line coach last year, you know, in his battle with cancer. And Luke Butkus did a nice job, but didn't have the raw material to work with. Now, you're bringing a guy like Marrone, who's got a great reputation of working with offensive lines.
Yeah.
And I think his influence is being felt a little bit here because they're starting to get bigger on the offensive line, right? And not that they're going to go completely away from a zone blocking system, but when they first started out, it seemed like they wanted to rely on quick, agile, you know, and I think they may have gone too far in that direction. Now you look at Linder. Linder's a beast, right? Wisniewski's a beast.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Can is a beast. I mean, you got Parnell is a big physical specimen. And Jokel's beefing up. He's added already 12 pounds of muscle or so this offseason.
Sure.
So you're going to have a much bigger offensive line working for you this year.
No, you will, and it'll be interesting to see what they want to do as far as the style of running game they're gonna have this year. I looked at this last night because I got a call on it on the show, but they were sixth in the league in yards per carry last year at 4.5 yards per carry. They just weren't in enough football games to run the ball effectively at all here in Jacksonville last year. But sixth in the league at 4.5 yards a carry. If they can get that kind of number again this year, but instead of rushing the ball for 1,600 yards this year, rush for 2,600 yards as a team. You know, just the difference that would make for Blake Bortles and this team. And you look at just the depth on the offensive line compared to what it was for the last year or two here in Jacksonville, where if somebody went down, it was like, oh, what are they going to do?
Right.
Like, who the heck is going to play that position that can play it anywhere close to the guy they had as the starter penciled in there? You're not going to have that discussion this year. I think that across the line, you basically feel pretty good about if this guy goes down, we got another guy that can play that position. Left tackle, maybe not, because of what you expect out of Luke Jokel being the number two overall pick. But I think those other four positions, if the guy went down, you'd feel okay with the guy you're putting in there to play and replace him.
You make a great point about the average per carry, too. Now, some of that stats are funny things, right? When you are behind in games, teams tend to not respect the run, play the pass. You can rip off, you know, some of those. If you're picking up 12 on 3rd and 15, helps your average, but it doesn't help you win games.
Right.
And I heard Jeff and Dan on the drill this morning discussing this, and Jeff was saying, look, there's a higher correlation of success with running the football than there is with passing. As he said, you know, I've looked at the top 10 receivers compared to the top 10 runners, and more of the top 10 runners make the playoffs. Well, I will contend that, like you're saying, if you're in the lead in the fourth quarter because you're on a good team, you're going to get more opportunities to run the football. If you're on a bad team and you're behind, you're going to have more opportunities to play catch-up and pile up some of those passing stats.
Right.
So you got to look at why those stats are being accumulated by those players and what truly leads to those numbers and those ratios of those teams making the playoffs.
Sure. I mean, you're talking 1,600 yards rushing for this team last year. Blake Bortles was your second leading rusher. You don't want that. You don't want your quarterback being the number two guy. I think especially when you look at what the position is going to be for them coming into this season, where you're hoping T.J. Yeldon is kind of that bell cow guy, and you got two other guys that can do some things for you with Toby Gerhart and Denard Robinson. So I think that you'd like Blake Bortles to be your fourth leading rusher when everything is said and done this year with those other guys. But you're talking about 1,600 yards at 4.5 yards a pop, only 9 touchdowns rushing last season. I think you want that number to go somewhere in the mid-teens to the high teens. You'd want 15 to 18 probably rushing touchdowns.
Don't get John Osier on you. I wanted 10 more sacks this year.
Right.
And he thought I was being a little pie-eyed.
But 15 to 18 rushing touchdowns this year and get that number to around 1,800 yards rushing. And I think you'd feel much better about what you're – not 1,800, about 2,000 yards, 2,000 to 2,200, somewhere in there. And you'd feel pretty good about what you're doing for a team that was already close – in a lot of games last year, just that minimal of an improvement, the difference it would make for this offense and that side of the ball would be incredible. It just the pressure it would take off of Blake Bortles to have to constantly be the only steady thing in that offense on a week-to-week basis.
So in a nutshell, there's the case for the impact that Marrone can make on this offensive line and some of these acquisitions. One thing I'm already seeing, and you can reply via Twitter and Facebook, as always, to the question of the day, at MD_1010XL, at 1010XL Fat Tony, at 1010XL Tyler, is such a wide variety of guys being projected as the underrated acquisition to this football team, which I think that's a positive, right? That there are a lot of different ways of looking at, hey, I think this guy can help us, and he's not being talked about a lot.
Sure.
If you've got a bunch of those guys, I think that's probably a positive, unless I'm missing something, and it's quite possible that I am. 641-1010, the phone number, as always, to get on board on a Metro Rooter Wednesday. Don't forget, coming up, Alfie Crow right around the bottom of the hour, Fred Taylor at about 1045 today, and the general manager of your Jacksonville Jaguars, Dave Caldwell, scheduled to join us at 1115 today, I assume, has recuperated from his timeout celebrating his 13th wedding anniversary. So congrats to the Caldwells. We'll find out. It takes me a while. The older I get, takes me a little bit longer to recuperate, too. I tell you what, I was not too much a fan of those early morning radio hits. At least by my standards, they were early morning last Thursday and Friday. Let's just leave it at that. So
right.
You like to get in anything Jaguar or NFL related, 641-1010 is the number. Loaded up with guests today as well. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, we're live at Everbank on a Metro Rooter Wednesday. It's Jaguars today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. Metro Rooter, our Wednesday sponsor. Trust them to come to my house for all size plumbing jobs in your home, for your business, industrial plumbing, septic systems, you name it, even restaurant grease trap service. Metro Rooter's on the job with same-day service, weekends included, with the right people and the right equipment. They've been serving Jacksonville and the surrounding area since 1978. Visit MetroRooter.com or call 695-1911. That's 695-1911 for Metro Rooter, our Wednesday sponsor of Jaguars today. Got a tweet, a little confusing the way it was written, but I think it was a question and not a statement. I was in Chicago on Friday, and before round two of the draft started, we heard the news that, according to Kent Summers, I think Arizona Republic, I believe is who he writes for, if I'm not mistaken, or is he with the NFL Nation now with ESPN? I'm not sure. But regardless, Kent Summers covered the Cardinals for a long time. He tweeted out that if teams are interested, the Cardinals would listen to calls about Michael Floyd, the wide receiver. Remember, he came in the same year as Justin Blackmon.
Yep.
You like Floyd.
I love Floyd.
Apparently, had a lot of drops last year, or described as having a lot of drops. I'm reading a blurb on Roto World that was written after the news came out that he may be on the block. They targeted him downfield over a third of the time, his passes, his targets were over 20 yards, but he dropped nearly 19% of those. That's a high percentage of your passes. But the guy came into the league, 45 catches, 562 yards, kind of a quiet rookie season, get adjusted to the NFL. Second year, looked like he was going to be a breakout star. 66 catches, over 1,000 yards, 16 yards per catch average, and he scored 5 touchdowns for Arizona. Last year, dropped down to 47. Keep in mind, they drafted 2 rookie wide receivers, John Brown, who's a speedster, and Jaren Brown out of Clemson, who's a little bit of a bigger guy, and they each had their moments last year. You still have Larry Fitzgerald to contend with, and their quarterback play really suffered when Carson Palmer got hurt. We saw that in the playoffs where they were a shell of what they were offensively. So with all those factors going on, he dropped from 66 to 47 catches, but his per-catch average went up to nearly 18 yards a catch, and he scored 6 touchdowns. So not the worst numbers in the world. Reportedly, they were on the fence about picking up his fifth-year option, as you have the right to do with a first-round pick when you're the team, and they decided last week to do that. That, to me, makes it a little curious if anybody's going to give anything for Michael Floyd. This sure. year, he's making $1.7, $1.75 million, basically. But in 2016, he's due to make $7.3 million. I don't think Michael Floyd has proven to be worth $7.3 million at this point. But if he has a bounce-back season, that could turn out to be a bargain next year. You know, I don't get the sense, Tony, that the Jags, I don't know if they'd look at Michael Floyd and say, wow, this guy is so much of an upgrade over anything we have right now. I mean, again, I think John's right. You were right yesterday. Allen Robinson could be the breakout star in this wide receiving core. You're not going to take – you don't want him coming off the field. Guy was – top 5 in the National Football League in receptions on third down when he got hurt last year.
Mm-hmm.
So he's very productive and found his niche working out. Marquise Lee, completely different kind of receiver. You're not going to take him off the field. And you like what Allen Hurns gave you last year. You draft Rashad Green. I just don't see it as room here.
Michael Floyd, I like him enough that I would have to consider it if he really is going to be dangled out there, depending on what you'd have to give up to go get that guy.
What would you pay?
I don't know.
It's got to be a draft pick. I mean, that's what they'd want, a future draft pick. And you even wonder if now that the draft has concluded, teams are so funny about, I don't want to give up something for next year's pick because why don't I just trade him next year and try to get a pick and get one more year out of him at a pretty good price.
Right. I don't know what I'd give up. It's funny, the drops thing, because I'm looking at another site who is going through the receivers and the drops last year. They had Michael Floyd with 4 drops last year total on those 99 targets. We all know what the quarterback situation was in Arizona, by the way, Carson Palmer went down. It was beyond terrible, right? I mean, there was just nothing there. There was no threat of the run game. Who knows what was happening? I wasn't watching a ton of Arizona Cardinals football over the last month or so of the season. I know that was the worst playoff team I've ever seen in my life, that team that went out there to play Carolina. It was the worst. They were so terribly bad on that offensive side of the ball. I like Michael Floyd. We talked about it when we were getting ready for that 2000 and I guess it was 12 draft when the Jaguars traded up to go get Justin Blackmon. I liked Floyd a little bit more than I liked Justin Blackmon, but it felt like Floyd was the guy with baggage, believe it or not, going into that draft, and Blackmon was the guy who seemed to have cleaned up his image when we were getting ready for that particular NFL draft. I still like Michael Floyd. I don't know what I'd be willing to give up. I mean, 4th round pick, something like that.
Right. That's the question. Is it worth it to take a guy that, you know, not that a 4th round pick is
well, and
should be so critical, but
even with the depth chart they have here in Jacksonville, I feel like because of how talented I think a guy like Michael Floyd is, I think you're looking at the bottom end of the depth chart at wide receiver here in Jacksonville, and you're seeing Rashad Green, who they just drafted, and Tannen Doss. And if you brought in a guy like Michael Floyd, basically you're saying, we're not keeping both of those, right? That's what the decision becomes. It becomes one of these guys is going to be our punt returner and help us in the slot to some degree, and the other guy's going to be gone. But that would be the decision you're making at wide receiver, to bring in a guy like Michael Floyd. I don't mind the team putting themselves in that kind of position if it means getting a guy that I think is as good as Michael Floyd is.
Oh, I don't mind either, because when you have to make tough decisions, that means your roster is getting better. I just don't know, and maybe I'm wrong, I don't know that the Jags would see him as much of an upgrade over what they currently have, at least in their mind, what they think they will sure. have, put it that way. Much like Floyd, pretty quiet rookie season, had the breakout second year. I think the Jags are thinking with good health, that's very possible for the two guys they drafted in the second round last sure. year.
And I wrote about that a little bit last week on a blurb for my Facebook page, but I put the – there was a year – it was Marquise Lee's sophomore year, and it was Amari Cooper's season last year. I didn't tell you which one was which. I just put the stats for them. They're so remarkably similar. And it was after the third round of the draft. I was like, if you're wondering why the Jaguars haven't jumped on wide receiver yet, they think they may have that. Like, that you can see why when they drafted Marquise Lee and Allen Robinson, they felt like they had the wide receiver position handled for the next 4 or 5 years because of these kind of numbers. They're about the same.
I will share that insightful post on the Jaguars Today Facebook page on the upcoming break. How about that? If I can dig that up. And we'll take a break right now, as a matter of fact, so we can come back, talk with Alfie Crow, Big Cat Country. He's got his 53-man projection all set, so you already know who's going to make the team. In Jacksonville here in 2015, and we'll get his thoughts on the draft. Fred Taylor coming up in about 20 minutes, and you all know who that guy is, and Dave Caldwell, less than an hour away. So pretty jammed up rest of the way. Weigh in on the fan feedback question of the day on Twitter, at MD_1010XL, at 1010XL Fat Tony, and on the Jaguars Today Facebook page as well, which is, what is the most underrated acquisition the Jags have made? Either that can be a coach, that can be a player, that can be free agent, that can be draft. However you want to look at it, which addition to this team is the one that needs to be talked about more because they could have a big impact. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you on a Metro Rooter Wednesday. Alfie Crow of Big Cat Country, straight ahead on 1010XL 92.5 FM. Metro Rooter brings you the show every Wednesday. Jaguars Today, Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony live at Everbank. Fred Taylor coming up in about 12 minutes. Dave Caldwell about 45 minutes away, Jaguar General Manager. Alfie Crow right now from Big Cat Country on Twitter at AlfieBCC. What's up, Alfie? How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you guys doing?
We're hanging in there,
good.
Man. We're hanging in there. The Jags draft gets universally praised by the national media. I think most people feel like they found a number of steals. Who is the player, either because you thought they got a great value or you just think, boy, what a great player they got in here, that excites you the most out of this year's draft class?
I think Michael Bennett out of Ohio State, because I am still trying to figure out how he lasted until the sixth round.
Yeah, that's one of the first things I want to ask Dave Caldwell about, right? I almost want to jump right to that.
Sure.
Is there a hidden reason behind him? I think he had a hamstring pull.
I know he had a hamstring, and I guess he's a little undersized and more of a specific scheme player, but, I mean, everyone in the NFL can use an interior pass rusher.
I agree.
Yeah, I totally agree with you, too, and it's going to make it really complicated to try to figure out what 10 or 11 guys are going to keep on that defensive line, and we'll get into your 53-man roster here in just a minute, Alfie. But, you know, looking back at this weekend and the draft, I know – I was talking to a lot of fans that were getting frustrated, especially after the second and third rounds, that this team wasn't directly addressing that wide receiver position. Were you waiting to see what they were going to do with that position? I know they got a lot of value in Rashad Green when everything was said and done in the fifth round, but did you expect them to pick a wide receiver a little bit earlier than the fifth?
No, I thought it would end up being in the third or fourth round. I figured it'd be someone like Tyler Lockett or Rashad Green, who they ended up with. But I've talked about it all offseason. I like the receivers they have. I think Allen Robinson's really underrated. I mean, you look at what he did with no training camp, no preseason, and he started practicing the first week and was their best receiver. So I think they're a lot higher on their young guys than most fans are, and that's natural.
I talked to you last, I guess it was Friday morning, electronically we spoke, and you said at the time you were hearing that T.J. Yeldon was the clear-cut third running back on their board. It would be no surprise, obviously, if they took him, and they did with the 36th pick. Between that, between the additions on the offensive line, how much better do you think this running game can be this year?
I think it should be significantly better. I mean, not only did they upgrade at running back with T.J. Yeldon, you'll get a healthy Denard back, a healthy Toby back. And the offensive line has been upgraded tenfold, both the starting lineup and the depth. So that's going to be huge going forward, is just how much better they are on the offensive line.
I know for me, I mean, you look back at this process now, we're in year three with Caldwell and Bradley. I don't think the offensive and defensive lines, the way that they have bolstered these two things up in the 3 years that they've been here, I don't think they've accomplished anything. Like, there hasn't been a bigger accomplishment than what they've been able to do on both lines of scrimmage going into year three.
Right, and I was talking with my friend the other day that it's funny how their weakest position group outside of linebacker last year was probably the offensive line. And going into this year, the defensive and offensive lines are probably their strongest units just because of what they've added, you know, the starters and the starters they had last year who are now the backups and the depth.
Yeah, linebacker still remains pretty thin. Saw your story, your write-up about the Jags possibly moving up in the draft, and Ryan Day wrote the story for Big Cat Country, but Dave Caldwell felt that maybe a third-round pick would get it done, possibly even next year's. But let's play the what-if game. Let's say Melvin Gordon slid a little bit further because Gurley was never going to make it that far down. And you had the opportunity. Would you rather have T.J. Yeldon and A.J. Cann or Melvin Gordon?
I think I'd rather have Yeldon and Cann because Cann was he was supposed to be a top 40 guy.
Right.
So, I mean, you got two really good players versus one, and with Yeldon and Gordon, you know, how much better is Gordon than Yeldon?
Oh, he may be, but I think when you add in, and I would have preferred Gordon to Yeldon, and I think they would have
right,
too. That's why they're looking to trade up. But you're right, and I really think, you know, for me, I wouldn't have taken Yeldon there. Doesn't mean I don't think he's the next best guy, but I think there were enough good guys. But I've said this several times now that once you got to the third round, and you couldn't know it would play out this way, but the fact that it did, and you got a top 40, top 45 guy, flip those picks in the other order, and nobody really would have batted an eye all that much. It would have been a little surprised because we didn't talk about drafting a lineman there. But his name had been mocked to the Jags in the second round in a couple of actual mock drafts, so it wouldn't have been a shocker.
Right, exactly. And that was the thing is, you know, we joke about this a lot. Well, if you flip the two picks, no one will complain. And I think you're right that, or, you know, even if you pick, you know, Green in the fourth and Sample in the fifth, no one really complains about it. So that was kind of their theme of the draft, where it was just value on value on value.
You think Sergio Brown opens as a starter, or can Sample push him out of there?
I think it'll be a real competition, but I would tend to lean towards the veteran getting the initial start. But I watched some of Sample trying to watch Holloman, and you know, he reminds me a lot of Cyprian. He's a little better in coverage, so it makes more sense that they look at him as that free safety role.
Right. All right. Well, you know what? Whether it's a Big Cat Country or anyone else, pretty much universal praise for the draft, at least on paper, for the Jacksonville Jaguars. Overall, how high of a grade for the free agency? I mean, they still may add a few guys here and there. I'm sure they will. But free agency and the draft combined, the overall offseason, is it a clear-cut A to you?
Absolutely. I think they upgraded just about every area that they realistically could, except for linebacker, and that was, you know, the free agent market wasn't very good and the draft wasn't very good, so they did about as well as they could there.
All right, Alfie Crow, check him out on Twitter, at AlfieBCC, and, of course, on the digital pages of BigCatCountry.com. Alfie, appreciate it, man. We'll catch up with you soon.
All right, thanks for having me.
All right, buddy, there he goes, Alfie Crow, Big Cat Country, coming up in a few moments. Fred Taylor of the Jacksonville Jaguars fame expected to join us, talk about, among other things, Dante Fowler's acquisition by the Jags, and to be best friends with the young Kelvin Taylor
right.
in Gainesville. So I'm sure Fred knows him pretty well, and I'm sure Fred's happy to have a little more orange and blue playing for the teal, black, and gold these days. But it is kind of fun, Tony, to sit there and project what's coming up. It's impossible to know. And that's the question with Nick Marshall. Is he a guy you think you can sneak through to get on the practice squad? Because he is a pretty high-profile player, despite the fact that he's switching back to a position he hasn't played in a few years. You see the athleticism that was on display at the quarterback position, and you know, you just look at that and say, wow, do I want that on my roster? And I would think, you know, if he shows anything in the preseason, that's going to be a tough decision for the Jags to make.
No, you would think. And look, it's odd You know, we've watched quarterbacks in college make the transition to other positions coming to the NFL several times, right? I mean, but they generally go to, like Denard Robinson's doing, running back. They go play wide receiver. They do these different kinds of things. They don't transition to corner because the skill set at corner is so specific. It's not just try to go get in some space and make something happen. It is shut down somebody else's space. And I get that he did it in high school, that he did it for a little while he was at Georgia, but it's still such a difficult position to play at the National Football League level. He's a great athlete. I would think trying to get back into a position where he can effectively play corner at the NFL level is going to be a really, really tall task for Nick Marshall going forward.
But the fact that he has some background doing it,
it'll help.
Gives him a head start.
Yeah,
you know?
It'll help.
Look, I mean, we've seen guys do it. Troy Brown was able to do it pretty effectively for the New England Patriots, but it's not that commonplace. And didn't Tywan Jones try to do that with the Raiders?
I think so, yeah.
He was a running back. They're switching him back. He's still on that roster. They're switching him back to running back. But I think it was corner that they tried to switch him to ultimately down the line, awaiting Freddie T, Fred Taylor made, to join us here for a few minutes, talk about Dante Fowler, and we may take a quick time out, come back with Freddie in just a few minutes. We've got Dave Caldwell coming up at 11:15. What's the word there, Tony?
He was just showing me he sent the right number.
All right.
Ryan Robinson, so we know he has the right number.
All right. I tell you, let's do this. Let's take a quick timeout. If Fred calls in, we'll jump out early out of the break. But Fred Taylor expected to join us in just a few minutes to take a look at what's going on for the Jaguars with the addition of Dante Fowler and more. That's straight ahead. It's a Metro Rooter Wednesday. Jaguars Today continues live from Everbank on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Now, Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM. And now, this date in football history.
All right, this date in football history, May 6th. Well, got some birthdays and one with a Jaguar connection, Mr. Paul Fraze. Happy 50th to Paul Fraze. Started out with the Jets, obviously played some defensive line here in Jacksonville and remains a Jacksonville resident to this day. Also born on this date in football history in, if my computer would work for me, 1978. John Abraham, Tony, former first-round pick of the Jets out of South Carolina. Five-time Pro Bowler, played a long time with Atlanta, then with Arizona. Six different years, including just a couple of years ago, had double-digit sacks, 133.5 on his career. But probably the most prolific birthday boy today, Jason Witten, born 33 years ago, 1982. 10 Pro Bowls for Witten, both he and Abraham, both first-team All-Pros. Twice in their career. This date in football history brought to you by the Best Fence Company of Jacksonville. Their mission to fabricate and install the highest quality product for you at a competitive price while giving you unsurpassed customer service. Get a professional free estimate at your convenience by calling 268-1638 or visit bestfencejacks.net for more information. With that, the Honda Drive will wait. Let's talk with Freddie T. Fred Taylor joining us now on Jaguars Today on 1010XL. Freddie, what's up, man? How are you?
All is great. How about yourself, buddy?
We're good, man. We're good. You got to be excited. I know how you love your orange and blue, and I know how you love when they come to join the Jaguars. So how excited were you not only for another Gator connection here, but a position of need for Jacksonville and apparently a pretty close family friend in Dante Fowler?
You know, Dante's a great kid, first and foremost. I think what's important there in that selection is not only – is he just an outstanding athlete and a person. You know, the way that the league is going nowadays and how social media, you know, everything is so public, and a lot of these kids tend to linger towards what their peers are doing. So I like to use the term peer influence. Dante, he's a kid with his own mind. He's going to work hard, and he's definitely not going to be one of those kids that influence, and you're not going to see him in the media and all that other stuff. So I think that was a very good pick by Dave and Gus and the guys in the front office.
Before we get back into some of the serious conversation here, Fred, have you talked to him about the outfit? you know, that he chose to wear the gold shoes, all that swag up there on stage.
Definitely a lot of swag. I mean, he's a Florida guy. So, hey, he just wanted to bring in the moment, man. I thought he hit it off okay. In my fashion sense, for the red carpet, I'm gonna give him an 8.5. How about that?
8.5? All right, that's fine.
And half.
You know what? We'll take 8.5 sacks this year, Fred. How about that? Let's
go ahead and make that 10.5.
Why not, right? I'm willing to go. No limits, man. That's what Gus Bradley's mantra is this year. Fred Taylor here with us on Jaguars today. Mike Dempsey, Tony Smith here with you on 1010XL. Fred, the running game really couldn't get going last year, even though they averaged a pretty good average per carry. I think a lot of that came because teams were just playing them to pass because they were behind a lot. They add T.J. Yeldon. What do you think about the fit now with T.J. Yeldon coming to Jacksonville?
You know, TJ, he's a running back who can get it done. I mean, he's a young kid who has pretty good speed. He's very shifty. I mean, he could catch the ball pretty well. He could get it done. It's just a matter of getting him in a mix. You know, getting back there, splitting some time with Denard, and learning, you know, the NFL game. The transition isn't always a smooth transition for a lot of these guys because they tend to make the game bigger than what it really is. But once he learns the tempo of the NFL game and learns how to hide his body behind those big offensive linemen up front, I mean, I really think he's a guy that can provide a pretty good spark and also a guy who could be that go-to-distance guy. But coming in early, I really think he'll benefit more from, you know, just leaning on Denard and those guys and really just trying to learn the system.
You made a pretty quick transition to the National Football League, I think it's fair to say, Fred. If you were to give TJ one piece of personal advice running back to running back, what would that piece of advice be?
You know, Mike, let me start with person to person. I would just tell him to stay humble, first and foremost, because he's going to have some success. He's going to have the media telling him this. People are going to tell him all types of stuff. But stay humble is the first part, person to person, when I meet him. Secondly, player to player, running back to running back, I would just say, you know, just trust your eyes, man. When you're out there on the field, you're the CEO, don't second guess yourself. You got to make that cut, live with it, and please do not miss a block and get the quarterback killed. We've been waiting for a long time to get a guy like Blake Bortles in there, and we got to protect the quarterback. So trust your eyes when you're running it, and please protect the quarterback when you're not running it. But ball security, that trumps everything else.
Fred Taylor joining us here on Jaguars today. And, Fred, you mentioned Toby Gerhart and Denard Robinson, the other running backs on this roster. T.J. Yeldon coming in as a second-round pick. What does that mean for the other guys that were already here in Jacksonville? As someone, obviously, they don't have the status that you did when Maurice Jones-Drew was picked in the second round, but what does it mean when you see somebody else drafted at your position coming into a franchise?
Hey, you welcome that. If you're a player and if you're anything that you were drafted to be, you welcome that competition. Everybody starts with a blank canvas, man, and you create your masterpiece by the way you compete. And I say that to all the guys all the time. Toby, you know, Denard, Storm. I spoke with Storm a couple days ago. It's all about competition, man. You get out there and you do your thing. The coach is going to make the decision. And the guys that go out there and show that they're prepared and, you know, that they're not knuckleheads and they're going to stay out of the way of the media and do what's right, those are the guys that are going to get the snaps. And everything else is going to handle itself. So go compete and leave the rest to the coaches.
Fred, when you talk about competition, there's a difference between competition and quality competition. I think the Jags have more of that this year than they've had in recent years. When you look at potentially three guys that could push for starting jobs on the offensive line that weren't here last year, and we're just going through the defensive line, there are about 12 guys for 10 jobs that you'd be very happy to keep any combination of the 10 of them. That's the ideal, right? When you get to the spot where you have to make those tough decisions and let good players go.
I think that's a credit to the front office. You know, Dave and Gus and the team up front, I mean, they didn't waste a whole lot of time in free agency. When you have a lot of young guys, all of the guys come in young, ready to compete, and hungry. The only thing they tend to lack, if any, is the experience. But they can lean on that one veteran or two in their group and learn the NFL game and learn how to study and learn that this is their job now. But the competition side of it is going to always be there when you're dealing with young guys who really want to get out there, and they, in the back of their minds, they want to be superstars someday. Plus, they want to work for that second deal, that huge contract, you know, as opposed to that first contract they tend to get with not a lot of guarantees. But they want that big, big, big deal, and they want to bust their butts to get it. And that's usually what you'll see now. The team is young, and they brought other young guys in. So when you put those two things together, then you're going to have so much competition out there, and it's going to make it hard on the coaches to figure out who's the best guy for this job.
Fred, we've mentioned Doug Marrone a couple of times already on the show this morning. How much of a difference can a position coach have on that group of players on a roster?
Well, the coaches, man, the position coaches, what they want to do as position coaches is they just want to establish trust from their players. And as a player, you want to make sure that your coach is, you know, he's on your side. What he says is what you're getting, and vice versa. There shouldn't be any black and white. You want to be able to trust your position coach that when things aren't going right, he's going to redirect you and stick behind you and not, you know, go whisper certain things to the coaches up front or to the head coach and then come back to you and it's a different story. You don't want that. So you want to be able to establish trust with your players and have their back as well. And I think that, you know, as long as they have that sort of relationship, they're going to have a great working relationship, and each will benefit.
Freddie T, we really enjoyed your work on the Jaguar Game Day broadcast last year, and look forward to having you back for another round of that. I've been told to ask you how that golf game's coming along. yeah, what's the story with your off season right now?
You know what? I got an email from Coach Coughlin about the J Fund and their charity event that's coming up here on the 17th and 18th, golf on the 18th. And I've been at this crazy game now for a couple weeks because I had took a break during the season, traveling back and forth, doing a few other business things or trying to get involved, and I hadn't been able to get out much. But now I got that itch again. I'm trying to fix this old – I like – my swing is rubbish. It's extremely rubbish. I am working at it, and when I emailed Coach Coughlin, what he said was, don't you know we're doing this thing that's called the draft right now. I'll talk to you next week. So that was
Yeah, he didn't have time to schedule his celebrity appearances. You caught him at the wrong time on that one, huh?
Yeah, I kind of replied 2 or 3 days later than when they initially emailed me. But he definitely said he's looking forward to having me, and I'm looking forward to getting out there on TPC and whacking up the lawn.
All right. Well, hey, you know what? If you're in town, if you get any time, we'd love to see you swing by the facility and jump on board and spend a few minutes with us here today. But it's good to catch up with you, man. You sound great, as always. Glad you're excited about the acquisitions. I know Jaguar fans are. Frank, can you believe all the – I mean, universally, across the country, no matter what outlet it was, B-plus was the worst grade anybody gave the Jags. Isn't that nice to see?
Great on paper. And I really think it was a solid draft. But we all – every year, if you're a fan of a team, you're going to be a little – you tend to try and grade the draft with the optimism that your team did it and they hit it off right. But you still got to get out there on Sundays to win those games. So let's hope these young guys come in, develop accordingly, and get out there and win us more than 4 games this year.
No doubt about it. Freddie T, great stuff, man. Appreciate the time today and continued good health. We'll see you soon, okay?
All right, thanks, Mike. I appreciate it.
All right, Fred Taylor needs no introduction, but you give him one anyway, is one of the greatest single handful of Jaguars of all time.
Yeah, he's in the pride, baby.
I had so much fun working with Fred. I know you did too, Tony. It was amazing to have him in here in studio for all the home games and on remote for all the road games, doing post game with us, and just, I mean, a note taker like you wouldn't believe. You know, that's one thing. Some of these guys just kind of cruise in and, you know, just kind of eyeball it and go off the cuff. Fred Taylor is very dedicated to becoming the best broadcaster he can be, however far he goes with that, but certainly with the Jaguar Radio Network, he would come in here with page after page after page of notes that he's taken. And, I mean, just stuff that you and I could watch a game 100 times and we're not going to pick up because we haven't been in the situations that Fred's been in. So
no, he was great. And he would stop us when we were in the middle of a post game and he'd be like, hey, I want to make sure we hit on this. And it would just be something from his notes that he wanted to make sure we got to at some point during the post game. So he did a wonderful job on that last year. I do love all these guys after they retire. They're willing to throw all these expectations on everybody else. It's like, how about 8.5 seconds? 8.5. 10.5.
Right. Hey, Fred, how about 25 touchdowns out of you this year? Come on. All right, Freddie T, good stuff. Tony, with that, I think we have time to squeeze it in before Dave Caldwell. Here's the Honda Drive Around the NFL.
Now, the Honda Drive Around the NFL, brought to you by your Jacksonville area Honda dealers.
The Kansas City Chiefs have released quarterback Terrell Pryor. The Chiefs signed Pryor at the end of the last season and now have Alex Smith, Chase Daniel, Aaron Murray, and Tyler Bray, who is recovering from a torn ACL, as their quarterback depth chart. Former Titans and Jets running back Chris Johnson is still looking for a new job, CJ2K. Most recently, he pitched himself to the Dallas Cowboys via TMZ saying, quote, I'd fit good in Dallas. They need it. Dallas, come holler at me. Remember that a month or so where we all thought that the Detroit Lions might have found something in this Titus Young guy? Yeah, that's over and done with. Young pleaded guilty to a felony battery charge last month. He has been given 5 years probation and a year of inpatient treatment and therapy after several run-ins with the law over the course of the last couple of years. Doctors at the Crosby Center in California testified that Young had been misdiagnosed and mistreated as both schizophrenic and bipolar, and that they've seen better results since he's come to them and been under their care, that according to Pro Football Talk. So you certainly hope a guy, look, he's not going to play football again, but at least gets his personal life in order for someone that was as talented as Titus Young was. He's been a complete and total disaster away from the
field.
If
he truly has mental health issues, right, you know, you feel for the guy and, get your life straight. And he's fortunate that he's not going to spend more time in jail, right? I mean, 5 years of probation, better than 5 years of hard time for Titus Young. So there you have it. That's a Honda Drive Around the NFL. Okay, thanks, Fred Taylor, for stopping by today, the general manager of your Jacksonville Jaguars. Dave Caldwell, straight ahead. It's Jaguars Today on iMetro Rooter Wednesday. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. All right, we continue along here. Metro Rooter, our Wednesday sponsor, live at Everbank. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you on Jaguars Today, 1010XL, 92.5 FM. We're about to lock him in the closet because you don't get to talk to Dave. It's like the time of year to talk to Dave Caldwell, right?
I was curious, do you, like, you finish the draft, you sign all the undrafted guys, you just push away from the table like it's Thanksgiving night and go, all right, Gus, coach him up. I'm done.
Don't have to talk to those media guys for a while. So how you feel? I mean, everybody praised the draft. I mean, I know that they could pan it and it doesn't mean anything, too. So it's got to be nice, though, to see universal praise of the work you've done.
Well, yeah, I guess so. You know, and hopefully over time, everybody's right that's praising us, and hopefully we're right with our decisions. But you never know. Now it's our job to make these decisions work, and it takes a lot of work and effort to make sure these rookies have everything they need to be successful. And since I don't get to talk to you guys a lot, I have a question. How did the name Fat Tony come along?
He gave it to me. He gave it to me. This is years ago when we were working at a different station. I started as an intern, and honestly, I was 50 pounds lighter.
Probably when Mike it has nothing to do with his size.
Right. My name is Anthony Smith, and he said, Smith, like I was Italian. He's like, Smith, is that some kind of like mob thing? Are you in witness protection? So he gave me Fat Tony, and it is stuck.
So his original name had to be Fat Tony. Right. Now he's just Tony Smith.
For like 10
Smith.
Years.
Now you should open up a pizza place.
You got
should,
it, man.
Fat Tony's.
You got it.
You know, I'm a good nickname giver.
Well, nicknames you don't give yourself, right?
No.
You know, if someone gives you a nickname, if it sticks, there it is.
I tried to go with genius for me. It didn't take.
Right.
Did not
well, you take. Can't give yourself a nickname. That's kind of rule number one.
Do you like, I mean, because some people call you the general. Do you like, you're aware of what they call you?
Yeah. I'm a little bit aware of it just because I have some friends from home that will send me some texts and stuff like that. But whatever.
They're pretty happy with you right now, though, as a collective, the Jag fan base. But for you, I mean, you have a plan when you go into the offseason. It's not just the draft. It's free agency and how that's all going to work together and trying to re-sign some of your own key guys. Did you hit most of the points you're trying to get accomplished?
Yeah, I think so. I know we had a list of 10 needs on our board, and it was funny. I just told Gus to come in the office the other day. I said, hey, look at that board. And we went check through free agency and through the draft. And we hit all 10 needs. Now, whether we hit the right players or not, well, that will remain to be seen. But we feel good about it. And a lot of the free agent acquisitions, and like we talked about, you know, the signing of Jared Odrich allowed us to take an edge rusher and Dante Fowler. The signing of Jeremy Parnell allowed us to take a guard. And so a lot of those things that we felt like if we got done in free agency, that the rest of the spots we could fill in the draft.
So you feel like you hit all those areas of need when you look at the roster as it stands right now? Is there still an area or two that you're looking at saying, all right, we still need to be looking to upgrade here?
Yeah, there is. And that will never change. If we win, you know, but if you ask the New England Patriots, they're probably looking at areas where they can improve. And Seattle Seahawks have had two great years, and they're always looking to improve. That's never going to change. And that's the art of being successful over a period of time. We need to, you know, get this rolling in the right direction and then continue to upgrade to get to our ultimate goals.
We understand the selection of Dante Fowler. I mean, we sit here, we know you have the third pick. We pretty much know what your options are going to be. So we beat that thing to death for months. But let's talk about TJ Yeldon a little bit. What is it about him that made him the next guy that you felt like, you know what, we're not going to risk waiting another round. This is the guy we've got to have to fit into what we want to do.
Well, his size for one, you know, in the NFL, we look for guys that are 6 foot plus, 220 plus, and then he has a speed too on top of it, so 4.5. So he could be a three down back. He has excellent hands out of the backfield. He's an excellent pass catcher. You can split him out wide, and his versatility on that aspect, but also big enough to be in pass protection and offer you a threat on third down. So that was one. Two is he's got excellent run instincts. He sees holes very quickly. He feels kind of what we say the first level and why he's looking at the second level to get the most out of every run. And he runs hard, and he's a really good back in the SEC that played in a pro-style offense, and we just felt like that he wouldn't last to the third round. And sure enough, you know, we got texts after from a few teams saying, hey, we were going to take him in the second round. And so let's not risk it if we felt like that we can get a guy that could come in and make a difference for us.
I know you've excuse me, said before that you felt like running back is one of those last things you add to a team and a roster that you feel like is ready to be competitive. So do you feel like with everything you've done this offseason going into this draft, this team is ready to start winning now?
Well, we would hope so. And, you know, we probably felt like we were ready to start winning, you know, internally the first 2 years. We always go into it with, you know, an optimistic approach and just our thought processes. You never know what happens. The NFL is such a competitive league that, you know, so many of the games come down to a touchdown or less. And we were in a lot of those games last year. And now, you know, with an upgraded talent through free agency and upgraded talent in the draft and all of our younger players, you know, with a year more experience, you know, some of those games maybe we lost by 3 or 4 points or a touchdown are going to swing in our favor this year for 3 or 4 points or a touchdown. And then once you get some momentum, you never know what can happen.
Dave Caldwell here with us, Jaguar General Manager on 1010XL. Dave, you felt like Yeldon wouldn't last another round, but it seemed like then from that point on, every other pick you had to be going, how did this guy last to our pick? I mean, was Can simply a, I can't believe he's here, we have to kind of maybe deviate from what we were thinking because he's too good to pass up?
Yeah, and that was it. And it was the first time really in 3 years that we were able to say, you know what, we have needs elsewhere, but let's take the best player available, and let's just take the guy that can come in and help this team. Maybe not this year, but for many years to come, and be a really solid pro at either one or two guards, or possibly cross train the center in the future. So you can never have enough depth at that offensive line position, and felt good. He's a great kid, 2-time team captain, 51 some odd starts there.
Is that one? I mean, the offensive line seems like some area that maybe got the biggest overhaul this year, because potentially, I mean, Can may push Beatles this year. Wisniewski certainly thinks he's going to win that job, and that's the right attitude to have, and you drafted signed Parnell to be the right tackle. So is that unit as improved as any in your eyes?
Yeah, we feel so. We feel like it. And then the addition of Luke Joeckel going into his third year, Brandon Linder going into his second year. Let's not forget about Austin Pastore, who will compete at right tackle along with some of those guard spots too. And I think you're going to find a really good competition. And then we also have guys like Josh Wells and Tyler Shatley that we feel really good about. And so we were looking at just the other day about the depth of that position, and it's going to be a tough cut come training camp.
James Sample, the safety out of Louisville. I know there were a lot of questions about which direction the team would go if they were going to address that safety position. Do you draft the guy who plays corner, who's really athletic, and try to transition him there? Why did you end up with James Sample as the guy that you selected to upgrade that position?
Well, first and foremost, he's a very good football player, and he hits like a strong safety, and then he's got ball skills and range like a free safety. Probably maybe not as fast as some like the 4.4 guys, but he's 4.5, and with his length at 6'2", 210 plus pounds, he can cover from red line to red line. So we'll start him at free safety, and until we can find the ideal fit at that position, we felt like a guy like him and Sip, or Sip and Sergio Brown, is a good problem to have, and both those guys are excellent special teams players, and they can also play strong safety too.
And at that point, you're considering Rashad Greene, right, in the fourth round. Again, there he is in the fifth round. You had to be saying, wow, things are going our way here. Just give us the breakdown of how he fits in skill set wise into what you plan to do.
Well, it's funny, even the weeks leading up to the draft, we are with our scouting personnel staff and Coach Bradley, we would go through scenarios, and a lot of times whoever we're doing mock drafts with would take Rashad Greene in the third round. And we'd say, okay, we feel good about this? Yeah, we feel good about it. And then as it fell and we took AJ Khan, who we, you know, had a higher grade on, and then they were sitting there in the fourth round, and James Sample's there, and we had him going in the third round in a lot of our kind of mock drafts, and I was like, okay, let's take James. And then now in the fifth round, we're like, well, let's not pass. Let's not get silly. And and then it took time to take him. So he's going to play a slot. He'll play a little bit of outside too, and then he'll compete for that starting punt return job.
Michael Bennett in the sixth round. I saw mocks with him going as high as the second round. I don't know what the conversation was like with him inside of NFL buildings, but I know outside that's kind of the conversation with him. You wind up getting him in the sixth round. Again, just that continued story of the crazy value it felt like for you guys throughout this draft.
Well, it's interesting with mock drafts because we get so much credit for taking a guy in the sixth round that they had rated as a second rounder, but if we took a guy in the second round that they had rated as a sixth rounder, we'd be in a lot of trouble, right?
We'd be leading the charge. You kidding me? But what was it just, I mean, what do you think caused the fall for him?
Well, I know he didn't have a great postseason. He played late in the year injured, and to his credit, had a lot of different issues, but he played his butt off throughout the end of the year into the national championship. And then he couldn't go to the Senior Bowl because he was rehabbing, and then he was still rehabbing through the combine, and then he had his pro day, and he kind of tweaked his hamstring again. And so it was just kind of a little bit of that. Plus, you know, he's a 6'2", 295-pound defensive tackle. There's a little element of him being a scheme fit. And for us, he's an excellent scheme fit. But there's only a handful of teams that run our style of defense. So probably just a situation or circumstances of, you know, teams were filling their needs, and they were filling for what their scheme was. And he was just, you know, it happens every year. Same reason why Allen Hurns goes undrafted last year and then, you know, is up there and one of the top receivers in the league with rookies.
Sure. Is he going to work this weekend, Michael Bennett?
We're going to wait to see. We're going to evaluate him on Thursday when he gets in and see, make sure he's 100%. I know he's close. If he's not close, then or if he's not 100%, we'll just be real cautious with him.
What about the seventh rounders? Give us a little insight. Neil Sterling, seems to people think size-wise, 6'3", 240. Could he play a little move tight end? Do you envision him as a wide receiver? How do you look at him and talk about Koyak as well?
Yeah, so we talked about it, like having Julius Thomas, Mercedes Lewis, Allen Robinson, and Neil Sterling, and we're like, well, if you're not going to be real fast, you're going to be real big. And that brings this element where he's got very good ball skills. He's a good route runner. He dominated that level of competition, 16-plus yards per catch. And so he's got some flexibility. He may not be listed as a tight end, but he may play some, you know, slot or big slot, and may go down at times, kind of like we did with Clay Harbor. And but he runs a sub 4.6, so he'll be a mismatch issue. And come from a smaller school, he'll have a little bit of a learning curve. And then Ben Koyak, you know, we feel really good about our two Ys and Mercedes Lewis, bringing him back, and Nick Jacobs as two of our really big physical tight ends. And then we have two athletic tight ends, and Julius Thomas and Clay Harbor, that we feel great about. We feel like between those four is one of the better stables in the league of tight ends. And then we were really looking for a guy that could do a little bit of both. And Ben Koyak fits that mold where if we lose one of our tight ends, either one of the Fs and Julius or Clay, that he could play there, or one of the Ys and Mercedes or Nick.
Among the undrafted signings, obviously the name that stands out is Nick Marshall. Coming here from Auburn, he's going to be transitioning back to that cornerback position coming into the NFL. What does he need to do to make the roster here in Jacksonville?
He just needs to rely on his skill set. It's a big athletic guy that runs very well. And, you know, it's going to take some time, and we're going to be patient with them. But we loved them the week of the Senior Bowl, and because we coached the week of the Senior Bowl, enabled us to get him after the draft. And I know he was fond of how he was coached and kind of our system that we run defensively. So we're going to give him every opportunity, whether it's corner, safety, special teams, to make this team. And we feel good that he's going to really push for a roster spot.
Different atmosphere this year's rookie minicamp. Obviously, you draft your franchise quarterback last year, the guy you hope to turn into the franchise quarterback. What are you looking for out of this minicamp?
Looking, A, to get out of it healthy, and B, just to get some work and kind of gauge where all the rookies are. And, you know, it's hard for these rookies. They go through their season ends in January. They get ready for the combine, and then they go on all these trips and physicals and all this stuff, and they never really have an opportunity to get in shape. And so just kind of gauge where they are and make sure that we have a plan going forward for all these guys that put them in the best position to make the team.
When do you get a chance to relax? I mean, I know you got the rookie minicamp coming up this weekend, and there's a few weeks off in there before the offseason really gets rolling on the field for these guys. Are you taking some time off?
Well, not right now, but my hours are a lot more abbreviated. I, you know, coming in about 8 o'clock and leaving around dinner time, you know, 5 o'clock, at home with my family. But Sunday was a great day. Got to spend it at the beach, and then after this rookie mini camp, I'll probably take a couple days next week, and then and June, at the end of June, is when we really all break, and I get a good couple weeks there.
Good problem to have when you got to cut good players eventually, right? I mean, that's what it looks like it's going to shape up to be for you.
Yeah, I think, you know, there'll no longer be. I think sometimes maybe year one, some of our guys made the team by default, and we had to take a lot of players. I think the first year we took 12 or 14 players off of waivers, you know, in the first couple weeks of the season just to fill out the roster. That won't be the case this year. We'll be cutting good players that will end up, you know, playing somewhere else, and you never want that to happen. But there's always a chance of parlaying some of those into you know, late round draft picks at the cut down time if teams have needs.
All right, go back to your office, close the door, give a little fist pump one more time. I told Tony I'd be doing that.
We don't revel. We got to continue to get better. Obviously.
I understand the process, Tony. It's a step in the
we'll
direction.
We'll revel for you.
We're Jaguar fans are reveling right now.
I'm going to start calling you Skinny T.
You got it.
There you,
you
go.
It.
All right, Dave Caldwell, the general or whatever you want to call him, your general manager, your Jacksonville Jaguars. Thanks for the time as always, man.
Thank you, guys.
All right, there he goes. He wins the offseason. Let's win the season. Let's win the postseason, Tony. That's
yeah,
the goal eventually for your Jacksonville Jaguars. Dave Caldwell, good enough to spend some time with us. All right, we'll take a quick timeout. We'll come back. Fan feedback spotlight asking you who's the most underrated acquisition the Jags have made this offseason. We'll do it next on 1010XL. All right, down the stretch we come. Metro Rooter, our Wednesday sponsor. They should be happy today. Good lineup today.
Yeah.
Alfie Crow, Big Cat Country, followed by Fred Taylor, followed by Dave Caldwell. Not too shabby there. This guy
pretty
just
good.
Tweeted, Tony, a moment ago from Keel Rising. Said, how lucky are we, speaking of the Jaguar fan base, said Caldwell and all the Jaguars brass so accessible I could listen all day. Hashtag I do. Hashtag Jaguars today. Didn't we just say we went to break, talked to Dave for a few minutes, a little off-the-record stuff for nuggets for down the road. But, I mean, it's so easy. He goes, so when are you guys taking a vacation? I'm like, what, are you kidding? This is the vacation, all right? I'll be punching that card at noon
right,
and walking out of the facility at noon today.
Told him we do 2 hours of sports radio.
Yes, and oh, dear, going to have to go to a mini camp on Friday. Oh,
my goodness.
Terrible.
Have to go watch these guys practice.
Terrible. I mean, seriously, they make it so easy. It's, you know, it's fun to talk to Gus, fun to talk to Dave, and as accessible as any I could imagine around the National Football League. Now let's win some games. Right, all the fun is fun, and that's fine. Nobody cares in the end.
Nope.
You don't win games. So go out and win a bunch, and we'll see if that's the case. And Dave Caldwell answered our question of the day. We asked him. Didn't want to put him on the spot to see how he, you know, answered on the air, but we'll get to his answer. The question of the day brought to you by the Tom Bush family of dealerships is this: which offseason acquisition, be it a coach or a player, free agent or rookie, however you want to look at it, is the most underrated addition to this Jaguar team, Tony? What do we get on Twitter today?
Mr. Caldwell pointed out three names.
Three names.
Does your answer match up with the general manager's? We'll play that game. Let's see what answers we got first. Ortapalooza said, got to be Sergio Brown or James Sample. Free safety limitations impacted defense in a big way in 2014. From Matt, Jeremy Parnell signing.
Ding, Mammoth, ding, ding.
Mammoth right tackle to get out of Blake's face. Cleaner pocket, whole offense will be better. He was one of the names mentioned. Eric, I believe it is Odrick. With Marks' injury uncertainty, his addition could be crucial to the line. From Cristiano, Stefan Wisniewski, second wave of free agent signing addressing maybe last year's biggest problem, offensive line. From Jason Parnell, because he brings the attitude needed to that line. He makes me want to block J.J. Watt. Well, maybe not. From at Irish Jaguar, Parnell, just through the nature of the position, right tackles tend to be underrated. From Demetrius, offensive line coach Doug Marrone, ding, ding, ding. The players may be the ones who get credit, but bringing aboard a proven teacher is critical. That's the second name that was mentioned. Jags brothers, Dan Skuda, ding, ding, ding.
Ding, ding, ding.
The third of the three names that Dave Caldwell singled out, rarely talked about, but hugely important. If he doesn't pan out, the defense will struggle mightily. From Love Hyphen, Doug Marrone as the offensive line coach, their improvement will dictate the whole season. From Cam, Doug Marrone, having a solid offensive line coach will greatly improve the offense. From Isaiah, Stefan Wisniewski, or however you spell it. From Jay Stance, it's a dual answer. Green and Bennett are draft steals that will produce for the Jags in 2015. From David, Doug Marrone. From AC Jag fan, Doug Marrone. From Nick, Jeremy Parnell, hopefully solidifies the offensive line. Hashtag no more sacks. Hashtag 71. Again, that's how many they gave up last year. And from Kevin, going to go with House, good cover corner who fits the Gus mold, plus gives Colvin more time to develop.
Yeah, keep in mind, when you talk about coaches, there are only a couple of additions, right? So typically the position coach is going to be more underrated than the coordinator level. So that's why I think Greg Olson's not getting mentioned here. But Dave Caldwell said Doug Marrone from the coaching standpoint. He said Jeremy Parnell. Yeah, and I mean, got a big smile on his face. Like, people don't realize how good Jeremy Parnell is going to be, at least how good they believe he's going to be. And they said Dan Skuda. And that was my initial vote, would go to Dan Skuda, because, again, with the way these players have raved about Dan Skuda.
Sure.
That, oh, we got Skuda. We got Skuda. They're so excited to play with this guy. He can pass rush. He can help you on special teams. And now, Tony, his role even more important, because they didn't really do anything else to supplement the linebacking core. So his role becomes more important. Here's a few on Facebook. Tommy Blair went with Aluwalu, in the re-signing of Aluwalu, which is not bad. I mean, they did re-sign him. He said he suffers from Mathis syndrome, a solid player who does his job, but is disliked by casual fans. I don't know if he's disliked as much as never gotten over the impression that he got overdrafted.
Sure.
He's been a solid player.
I think he played really well last year.
I think he did. It's clearly his best year that he's had. And he was healthy. Not a surprise that they went hand in hand. Billy went with James Sample, hashtag Jaguars today. Alan Lynn said the fact that multiple additions should greatly improve special teams play. And that's another, when the roster gets better, special teams play gets better. Because when you're talking about guys on the bottom end, as Dave Caldwell said, we had guys making the roster by default. Okay, we were picking up 10 guys early in the season. They're making the roster. Well, that means it's a flow chart. As the starting lineup is not as great as it can be, you're forcing more guys that maybe would be contributors on special teams into starting roles, and therefore the guys at the end of your bench, probably guys that don't belong in your roster in a lot of cases, and you suffer in special teams. So that's a good one. Johnny Crum with the national media, he would go with Skuda. So the players speak so highly of him, but there wasn't much coverage when he got here. Hashtag Jaguars today. That's great job, which we always appreciate. Joe Juden went with Devon House, guy with double-digit pass defenses the past 2 years and limited playing time with traits that fit Gus's defense. Cameron Franklin went with Jeremy Parnell or Sergio Brown. People say Sergio will have to compete to start. I think he will compete. It'll be an easy decision. He thinks he'll win that job. And Kenneth Killian went with Doug Marrone as well, hashtagging it up at Jaguars today.
So, I keep going back to Parnell. Like, in my own head, when we came up with the question this morning, that's the first guy I thought of, and I keep going back to that playoff game where I watched him punch a defensive lineman in the throat twice. Like, on the same play, he comes in and he checks him right under the chin, and then the guy kind of gets stunned a little bit, and when he comes at it again, he checks him again to finish that block. That's the most vivid image in my mind of any of the guys they brought in free agency or the draft this year. So when we asked the question, Parnell is the first guy that came to my mind.
Yeah, I mean, look, several good options, and you can make a case for a lot of them as they have, which I think is good that you have a lot of options as opposed to
it also
saying,
tells you where
I
the team
really
has
know.
Been. Right.
True. Right. That you that it's both. Right. The fact that you have so many new guys that can contribute. Well, how good was the roster? But who cares how good the roster? It was what it was coming into the offseason, and I think Dave Caldwell hit it. They had 10 needs. They checked every box. Now let's find out if they got the right guys to check the boxes with. Yep. And really goes to show you, he's quite honest about it. He's been a need-based drafter out of necessity the first 3 years, and with a guy like A.J. Cann. Now, he called him Cann. Brugler called him Cann. I checked with the PR staff. I was told Cann is the pronunciation. So I'm going with Cann for now. He also calls Jeremy Odrick. So we'll give some wiggle room. The GM right. can call him anything they like. Regardless, he said, look, this is a pure – this guy should not be on the board.
Yeah.
We do not need him necessarily.
You can almost sense his excitement that I was in the third round and I didn't have to take a guy because I needed a guy.
Right. Oh, I can just get this. This is the right. best thing, whether he plays this year or not. And, you know, a flexibility to play possibly one day any of the three interior positions. So – there you have it. And I also read into that. It's going to take him a little time to develop. Don't people have written Zane Beatles off, right? I mean, some people have. Like, he's done. He's out of here. Don't think that's the case. Regardless, even if right. he doesn't win the job, I don't think he's out of here. But competition is improving on the offensive line. All right, let's get one in under the wire here at 641-1010. Mike wanted to comment on the Dave Caldwell interview. Go ahead, Mike.
How you guys doing? Great interview. Great interview. I got two quick bones to throw at you, and I'll take it off there because I know we're short for time. First off, I need you to correct Fat Tony. On his show a couple of days ago, he said that Billy Donovan is the greatest college coach.
First of all, had nothing to do with Jaguars today. So next, what's the next point?
Okay, you got to get in with that. And the other one.
No, I don't.
You forgot to ask. Caldwell, one question. How did he feel about the movie Draft Day with him being the sucker GM on the show?
Why would we movie? Ask him about a movie that came out over a year ago?
Because it's kind of cool. I think it was kind of cool.
All right. Thank you, Mike. Appreciate the input. Tremendous way to end the program today. Billy Donovan and a movie that came out over a year ago. All right. I appreciate that you're an enthusiastic listener. You may have noticed we don't do a whole lot of college basketball on Jaguars today. No. In fact, none.
We still love you, Mike.
We will do a little, probably a little TPC over the next couple of days because we'll actually be there.
Yep.
We're going to be out at TPC tomorrow. David Garrard's supposed to join us. Going to be out there Friday. I'm probably going to leave early to get back from minicamp. I know you're going to be out there doing reports all day long, Tony. But for the folks out there planning to go to minicamp, don't forget jaguars.com/rookieminicamp. Sign up there. If you sign up, one person can sign up and bring three friends. You can bring a party of four on one pass, so to speak. But you have to have that to get in. That's what they're asking. It's simple. Just go to jaguars.com/rookieminicamp. Print it out or sign up. I'm not even sure what the official thing. It'll take you 2 seconds. Be done with it and be free and clear that you have access to Rookie Minicamp both Friday and Saturday from 1:10 to 3:15 on each day. So hope to see a bunch of you out there. Thanks for tuning in today. Thanks to Alfie Crow from Big Cat Country. Thanks to Fred Taylor of Jaguar fame, I guess, and the Jaguar pre and post. And thanks to Dave Caldwell, the general manager of your Jacksonville Jaguars. For Fat Tony, for Tyler Devitt, for Joe Fortunato, I am Mike Dempsey. This has been Jaguars Today. Thanks to our Wednesday sponsor, Metro Rooter. Signing off here on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.